With that, we're going to move into item six. We're going to switch gears a little bit. Going to turn it over to Karen to go through our legislative update. And the floor is yours.
Thanks. Switching gears from investments to legislation. But continuing the theme of fun, let's have some fun with looking at legislation that was actually enacted this year. That means that it'll become effective on January 1st of 2025, just in a few weeks. You do have a memo in the agenda packet from me that summarizes the legislative bills. These are all bills that you've seen before when they were pending. Now they became law. So I'll go over the summary and feel free to ask any questions or make any comments along the way. The first one we'll talk about is AB 2284. That particular bill was enacted. It made a change to the definition in the CERL, the County Employees Retirement Law of 1937. It made a change to the definition there of compensation earnable. That's the term that we use to describe compensation that counts for retirement purposes for legacy members. The change that this bill introduced is to the term grade in the statute, and it was put forth by the Union of the Sheriff's Deputies from Orange County. Their intention was to create a modification that would allow the inclusion of compensation that is earned by subgroups of job classifications. The bill was enacted in a way that makes it applicable to a county only if the Board of Supervisors of the county approves it and adopts it with a resolution, and only in that situation this new law becomes operative in the county. You may recall that this particular bill generated some opposition within the CERL systems. A number of CERL systems filed in opposition to it with the legislature, including CICERA, and later on SACRS, as the organization that represents all 20 systems, also filed in opposition, but despite that, the bill did pass and was signed by the governor.
But the amendment, as I recall this, the amendment to require an approval by the Board of Supervisors was enacted or adopted in the face of that opposition, right? That was in part a response to the system opposition?
That change was done pretty early on, certainly okay. Before some of the opposition letters were provided. So I'm not sure if that was...
Yeah, I may have misremembered that. Okay.
I think that it was probably a response to some concerns that were raised, the addition of the requirement of the County Board of Supervisors to make the statute or the change in the statute applicable in the county.
Candace, where does the board stand on that? Are they going to be voting on that? Because it has to be approved by the Board of Supervisors.
It hasn't come up yet. So it's something that we will need to, but it hasn't come to the board's radar yet. So
I have a clarification.
Go ahead.
When board acts on it, it basically affects all the participating employers, right? And so Central District's board doesn't have to vote on that, right?
Correct. It would be only the County Board of Supervisors that has the authority to make this new change in the law operative in the county. Okay. Districts don't have a role to play.
So is there a sense of urgency from CICERA with respect to needing action by the board to be able to anticipate potential changes or you know, adjusting calculations and all that stuff going forward? Or is it just, I'm not quite sure what the sense of urgency is.
There are two ways you know, a letter could be drafted by Christina stating the law has changed. This is an option you have if you haven't already communicated with them, or it's something that I could bring up with the county administrator and just get agendized.
Just so that things are clear going forward.
And I will point out that this board did update its compensation earnable policy to provide the definition of grade to refer to the employer's documentation. So it's not necessary for the Board of Supervisors to take this item up because we now point directly to the documentation that they already adopt.
Okay. Then we don't have to.
In that case, we'll move on to the next bill, which is AB 2474. This bill made two changes to the law applicable to CSERA. The first one has to do with payment of benefits to trust accounts, and it clarified that indeed it is allowable to pay a benefit to an account of a retiree that is held in a living trust.
This is the Mike Sloan testimonial bill, right?
Yes, and it's very nice since we're always trying to make sure that we're in compliance with our plan document, which is the CERL. It's nice to have the CERL specifically authorize something that the system is now doing.
I was only kidding. You know that.
Okay. The second part of the bill.
Go ahead, Karen. Sorry.
The second part of the bill of AB 2474 has to do with the retirees who come back to serve the employer after they retire. As you know, the law already places limits on those reemployment situations. This particular bill, the change in the law, has to do with what happens if a retiree exceeds those limitations. It clarifies that if that occurs, then the retiree, basically if they exceeded their hours, for example, the hour limit, and they should have been re-enrolled as a member of the system, then contributions will now be collected for that period of, the period that they exceeded the limited duration of their reemployment.
Saw that in the audit report, right? That was in this month's packet. I think it's on consent, but it's part of the packet. But so in the county's audit, there were some issues there, right? And so this bill is the remedy for that. Is that
fair? Yes, this bill clarifies what the remedy is if there's a violation.
Okay.
It also imposes obligations on the public employer beyond what was already in the law, and it allows the system, the retirement system, to assess a fee on the employer for these violations. The new law also states that the fees that the employer would have to pay can't be passed on to the member. So the employer has to be the one responsible for those fees. It also talks about what happens if the employer fails to provide reports to the system, which is something that we'll be implementing going forward and making sure that the employers are reporting to CSERA all of the retirees that are being reemployed. So I know that our compliance department will be working on that specifically next year to make sure that we are, everyone involved, the retirement system, the employer, and the retirees are all aware of the restrictions, aware of the consequences, the new financial consequences of a violation of these restrictions. Hopefully we'll achieve compliance there. The next bill we have here is AB 2715. That's a change to the Brown Act, which is the open meetings laws that apply to local agencies in California. And it specifically states that a closed session is authorized relating to cybersecurity. So that's, we think, a good change that clarifies that, that indeed is authorized under the Brown Act. Next, AB 2770. This has to do with the PTSD presumption in disability retirement. The presumption was added recently to the law with a sunset date. This particular bill, the change in the law, is to extend out the sunset date from January 1 of 2025 to January 1 of 2029. And you'll recall that what these presumptions do is they presume that if a safety member has the this particular condition, PTSD, that the PTSD is service-connected, and that presumption is rebuttable. Moving on to AB 3025, disallowed compensation. This is actually a fairly significant change in the law. It applies procedures that the legislature already imposed on CalPERS and CalSTRS a couple years ago, and this time around they wanted to make sure that the SURL systems also have the same procedure having to do with disallowed compensation. That's when the employer is reporting to the retirement system compensation as pensionable, which actually is not pensionable. And so the employer basically made a mistake and is reporting compensation that they shouldn't be reporting, meaning that contributions are being taken out for that pay, both employee and employer contributions. And this new process talks about what is to be done to undo that in a situation where this happened with active members and with retired members. And so with retired members, if something like that occurred, then most likely this additional compensation that's actually disallowed was included in their pension calculation, meaning that they're being overpaid a benefit. And so this kind of goes through what is to be done to undo that situation. The one addition here that we haven't had before is that the bill actually requires the employer to pay the retiree. So, of course, the retiree will now see a reduction in their retirement allowance to correct the error, but the employer would have to pay an amount that is 20% of the amount calculated by the pension system, representing the actuarial equivalent present value of the difference between the monthly allowance that was predicated on the disallowed compensation and the adjusted monthly allowance for the duration the system projects to pay that allowance to the retiree. So basically what it means is we look at, let's say the retiree is making $2,000 a month. When you consider the disallowed compensation, the benefit really should have been, say, $1,000. Then you have that $1,000 difference. So the system's actuary would have to calculate the present value of that payment, that difference, going forward. And this new law says that the employer would now have to pay 20% of that amount to the retiree within 4 years. So it's basically kind of a lump sum payment by the employer to compensate the retiree for the reduction in the benefit.
You mean the calculated amount over the expected length of time
that the retiree would get?
Yes.
So that could be a hefty sum.
It could
well,
be.
20% of it,
yeah.
But.
Yeah.
Could be.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I seem to recall that and I don't mean to get us into this discussion, but I seem to recall that in the context of trying to resolve overpayment, underpayment issues and retroactivity, that there are some tax rules that affect certainly our ability to do that to past a certain point. Are those constraints still existing? That is, the tax-based constraints?
Yes. So the tax kind of principles are why we have our error correction policies, both right. for contributions and for benefits, overpayments and underpayments. So our policies are still in place, and they're in compliance with tax rules. What this does is it only really focuses on situations where the error, if you will, occurred around disallowed compensation.
Right.
So, because there's a lot of other situations that could result in an error that, right. that are not disallowed compensation. But when there's disallowed compensation, and in particular when the employer is reporting to the retirement system pay that it shouldn't be reported, right. Then this kicks in. And so it does seem to be consistent with the tax law okay. sort of principles.
And this is prospective only, correct? It doesn't
correct.
Have retroactive application.
Yes.
Okay. Got it.
And so the last bill that I have here for you is SB 1379. It doesn't apply to Contra Costa. It doesn't apply to Cicera. It comes out of the county of Solano. But I have it in here because it's an interesting way to create an exception to the retiree back-to-work restrictions. In Solano County, there was apparently a retention and recruitment issue for the sheriff's department there, and they wanted to allow retirees to come back to work and not be subject to the limitations.
Right.
And so the legislature agreed, and the governor signed off on this, so now they have this exception. We are hearing from other counties that they're also looking at issues that are presented, recruitment and retention issues, and wanting to utilize retirees. So we may see more of these in the future come up where the legislature and the governor are perfectly fine with being flexible enough to basically lift the restrictions on the reemployment of retirees. Okay, so that concludes my report.
So I have a question, or not a question, but a request on the rebuttable presumption, the PTSD rebuttable presumption. I'd like us to schedule some point in 2025, earlier, hopefully better than later, an item that discusses what the manner and means is for marshaling evidence in that context. To the extent we can do that in our public session, I'd like to get a better understanding or have a firm understanding of what that process is.
Yes.
And how evidence is marshaled on either side of that question to understand in our role as we look at disabilities, how we weigh and sift through that. So because it was extended, it had a short, I think it was a one-year bill originally,
yeah.
right? Yeah. So with it now being extended and us presumably seeing additional cases, I think I'd like to have a little better clarity on that. So anyway, that's
and
a request I have for both of you. But
yeah, no, that's a great idea. And you're thinking of limiting it to the PTSD presumption?
Yes, currently, but I mean, I guess the same principle would apply really to any other health-based.
Yeah, all the presumptions
right?
are rebuttable. Yeah.
Yeah. All of them, yeah. So let's not
Absolutely.
Be exclusive. Yeah, I'd say all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.